All right, so check it out. You know how we talk about all the weird stuff they sneak into our food, our air, or even our clothes? Yeah, it turns out most shirts are basically made of plastic. You're sweating in chemicals, man. That's why I switched to Hypernatural. It's wild. They make their fabric from jade stone and crab shells. Yeah, you heard me right. Jade and crab shells. The jade keeps you naturally cool, like literally drops your skin temp down a few degrees. And the crab shell fibers, they fight odor and help your skin stay fresh all day long. So you can wear it longer, wash it less, and not smell like a dirty old gym towel. They use a fancy cotton, mother-of-pearl buttons, and zero junk. No polyester, no chemical dyes, and none of that synthetic garbage. It's clean, it's sustainable, and honestly, it's just cool gear. You can wear it anywhere, the gym, the range, whatever, and it looks legit. Go to hypernatural.com and use my code ZEROSIGNAL at checkout, and you'll get yourself 20% off. And get yourself the cleanest, most comfortable shirt you've ever worn. That's Hypernatural, nature engineered for comfort.
You're tuned into Zero Signal, a show about what they won't say and what you're probably already thinking. No fluff, no filters, no bullshit. Let's crack it open.
At this time, I'm going to ask you to fasten your seatbelts.
Welcome back to Zero Signal. So, Jay, you ever scroll through your feed and think something's kind of off? Like, the comments sound human, but they read like they've been stitched together by the algorithm that just learns small talk. It's all familiar, kind of same jokes, same outrage, same phrasing, but it just doesn't feel alive.
Yeah, man, I know exactly what you're talking about. You ever have that experience where you walk into a building and you hear a bunch of chatter in the distance, then all of a sudden you walk into the room and there's nothing there? It's just speakers playing the same things over and over again. It's almost like it's coordinated noise, just one big, massive echo chamber putting on its own dialogue.
Yeah, and that's the essence of what people are calling the dead internet theory. The ideal that somewhere around 2016, the real, often chaotic human web flatlined. What we're left with now is a simulation. Internet powered by bots, algorithmic sludge, and AI content trained on digital ghosts of our old conversations.
Yeah, no, you're going to honestly feel it, man. It's very repetitive. It's very, what's the word I'm looking for? Sameness. It's everything seems to be the same. The way every topic kind of spirals into the same five or six comments. And it's like the algorithm got so good at predicting our engagement that it started recycling our own behavior back to us.
Yeah, and the scary part is there's some truth under the paranoia. Half of the web traffic today is bots. Thousands of news sites are fully automated. Comment sections are flooded with LLM generation posts that sound almost right, but never quite human.
Yeah, so tonight we're going to take this theory apart. We're going to look at where it started, what actually is real about it, and how the internet's economics, ad fraud, SEO gaming, and automation have turned conversation into simulation.
And I suspect by the end of it, we'll have to ask, is the internet really dead or did we just automate humanity out of it?
Either way, man, it's a heck of a story.
Absolutely. Let's start with what is the dead internet theory? So the dead internet theory claims that since around 2016, the web has been overrun by automated systems, bots posting, AI writing, and algorithms curating, and corporations or governments quietly directing what surfaces. Human activity, according to the believers, is now just statistical noise inside a machine-driven ecosystem. They say the internet we love, the messy human one, has been replaced by a digital simulation of conversations designed to manipulate attention and control the narrative. Mainstream analysts label it as a conspiracy, but they concede that bot traffic and algorithms curate are measurable, real phenomenon. Whether you call it a theory or a symptom, it taps into a shared unease, the creeping suspicion that online world no longer needs people to keep running it. Have you experienced this? What do you think is the leading theory? Like when you are on social media, what calls your attention to perhaps you're talking to a bot, not a human?
So typically, I'm sure this will get better with time, but it doesn't seem to understand conversational prompts. It will ask you a basic question, you respond. It responds pretty quickly. It's almost instantaneous in some instances. And then you can kind of look at the grammar. And one of two things I notice, it's either really precise or it's so broken, it almost sounds like you're talking to someone from a different country. And then I tend to get a little suspicious and ask follow-up questions, and it doesn't seem to really understand what your question is. And it seems to answer with whatever direction it wants you to go in. I think for most of us, at least in 2025, we can suss them out pretty quick. But I fear moving forward into 26, 27, 28, it's going to be very difficult to tell if you're talking to an actual human or an AI bot. Because I know when you brought this subject up to me a couple weeks ago to do it, I didn't really know a whole lot about the dead internet theory. But in my research, I found some super interesting facts, and I'm sure we'll hit all of them through tonight. But I do want to share one story with you. It points back to, can relate to the dead internet theory. So anyway, I had to make an appointment with the dermatologist. So I call, and the person on the other end answers the phone. I'm like, wow, this person is super professional. They use precise language. And I was like, it's almost too perfect that it doesn't seem real. So after about two or three questions, I knew I was talking to a bot. And one of the things, I guess this is because it was trying to create appointments within their booking system. So to repeat your name back in very certain terms, first, middle, last, repeat your birthday back to you. But I was expecting more of a pause in between me stating something or asking a question, but it was almost instantaneous. But again, I think it points back to the dialogue that it shoots back to you. But it was an interesting experience to have because it was probably one of the most professional things I've talked to in a long time.
Man, that stuff is getting scary. So my current job, I've stood up a complete AI call center, and you lean into the LLMs and you try to naturalize language, meaning that some LLMs you can tell because they're really bad, meaning that you have a conversation with them and they're very precise, very professional, and you almost want to stop and say, hey, are you real or are you fake? And you're like waiting for a response and may not even know how to answer that. But if you start to get into natural language processing, a lot of stuff I do is for custom GPTs in my role base today, and you build those things into it, meaning that how I'm talking now when I say kind of or or ah, you can start to build those things in so you're not quite sure who you're talking to. And some of those even do video calls today where they look like real people and you really can't tell the difference. A lot of people have seen the videos online. Some are better than others. I think one of the most famous ones is the gorilla videos. I don't know if you've ever seen the gorilla videos that are a comedy act online. I see a lot of them on Facebook where it's a gorilla that acts like a human and they're dancing around and having some funny dialogue. And a lot of those, obviously, you can tell are fake. But more of the videos that you're seeing today that look very real, in fact, are not. I think the dead internet theory kind of leans into paranoia a little bit. It rests on the kernel of truth that I think is really hard to ignore, that the modern internet is crawling with bots. One of the statistics that I saw, according to Imperva's annual bad bot reports, automated traffic has hovered around 47 to 52% of all measured web activity for several years running now. Their 2023 report estimated roughly almost 50% of all traffic came from bots. Everything from harmless web crawlers to malicious scrapers, fake accounts, automated ad fraud operation. The 2025 figures show even more growth, driven by the rise of AI tools and large-scale automation targeting e-commerce with these APIs. Bots today don't just click ads or scrape prices. They really mimic human behavior. They generate posts on Reddit or Facebook. In fact, you can hire a bunch of companies that can say, give me your content and I'll make fake ads for you. They upvote content on things like Reddit and even hold basic conversations on social media platforms. Coordinated botnets amplify political messaging. They manipulate trends and topics and really distort what seems popular. Meanwhile, commercial bots built for SEO manipulation and marketing churn out AI-written blogs and product reviews and engagement comments designed to trick algorithms into ranking their owners higher. I think the line between human and bot activity is now so thin that every major analytics firm admits the numbers are quite blurry. Bot traffic isn't really an anomaly. It's the infrastructure of what we see today and how you market product. It drives impressions, engagement, and revenue metrics that all of these platforms, including the one we're on today, depend on. That's why this part of the dead internet theory really sticks with me. You don't have to believe in this kind of shadow conspiracy to see that half of the modern web is automated. I think the real question isn't whether bots have taken over, it's whether we have truly noticed when they did. And when we talk about this, think about the messages that they can amplify. If they want to get somebody into office, if they want to get a socialist into office, or whatever the case may be, it's not one person advocating now. You can have thousands of fictitious accounts amplifying a message that will persuade the people that are on social media platforms to buy into. And now you're talking about influence. When we're talking about this topic, we're almost talking about Project Bluebeam, because there's an army out there that's influencing what you think when you see it on a Facebook ad or what have you.
Yeah, it's scary when I think about Project Bluebeam and the 15-minute smart cities. We ran into the whole 6G thing where it can like project holograms and all that stuff. And think about how terrifying that's going to be when you have AI bots projecting holograms across your space. So I actually learned a lot when I was doing my deep dive on this subject, because I didn't know a whole lot about it. Like when I heard dead end internet theory, I thought, with being very novice in this concept, I thought somebody was suggesting that people were just not using the internet and the traffic had fallen off and it was just populated with billions and billions of dead websites or Reddit pages or forum pages. But I didn't really know what I was looking at or getting myself into. So I always try to start off at the base level. So I'm like, okay, so how are bots involved in the search engine? I always assume when I type something into a search engine, it was just connecting me to the server, just the web address. But what I didn't know is that these bots like crawl the internet. Say my neighbor had an internet site that gets maybe 3 views a month. I didn't realize that a bot would only look at that site probably once a month. So if he updated his website on his server with a new article, I may not be able to see it for another 30 to 60 days, depending on how often the bot got there. But websites like Fox News or anything that's popular, like CNN, Yahoo, the weather service, those bots are hitting those websites every 30 seconds. But what I didn't realize is that I was looking at an index. When you use Google's search engine, you're just looking at their index, what they've indexed with their bots. If you go to DuckDuckGo, same thing, you're looking at their index. So these big corporations index websites, and some may have some information that the other one doesn't. I think Google probably has most of the stuff out there, but some of these smaller search engines don't have as much output. They probably don't have as many bots, and so they're not indexing at the same rate. But I thought that was a little bit eye-opening for me. I just assumed everything was in real time, but no, you're actually, whenever you type something into the internet, you're looking at something that maybe 30 seconds ago or that was there a month ago. You're really at the mercy of when the bot comes back around to index your page back into their server.
Yeah, it's interesting because for the last 40, 50, 60 years, what have you, possibly longer, AI is crawling all that activity. It's learning from your information. It's learning how humans write and how they interact. Not only do they crawl like books that have been written or articles or newspapers, they're crawling like Reddit and Facebook. They're pulling all this content in so that they see how normal people interact with one another online and they learn from it. But I think the most scary thing is it's not like a superhuman intelligent. Like I take all the content and I give you some type of fact. Somebody's told me something, I give you some kind of fact output. These machines hallucinate at an extraordinary rate. So if you're like, give me a AI generated Bible, like they could manipulate all kinds of facts and they'll call them hallucinations, but it'll be very inconsistent. And I think that's what's scary, is because we're like muddy in the waters with our information that's out there today. And we're all starting to buy it from every kind of similar level. So when I think about it, like you think about these bots that are crawling activity out there and reading published information, but you add to that pool because a lot of people that write professionally are now using bots to write professionally. So the bots are crawling the bot. In my line of work today, I usually call it the bot wars, because we're defending against the bots and the bots are talking to each other. And at some point, there's going to be a critical point of failure. Potentially, AI goes away because it's teaching itself. It's learning on its own mechanisms. Or perhaps it goes in the opposite direction and we change the course of human history when people are no longer old enough to remember when they read the right history books. One of the interesting facts that I read the other day, according to NewsGuard, more than 2,000 AI-generated news and information sites now operate worldwide. This is the information that you're reading every day about what's going on in the world, and most of them without disclosure. They recycle press releases, invent sources, and exist purely to drive ad impression. They're not perhaps misinformation in the old sense. They're post-information, and they blend seamlessly with legitimate outlets, making them hard for both readers and the algorithm to tell the difference. On social media, the weirdness goes visual. Do you remember the shrimp Jesus wave on Facebook images?
I don't.
Yeah, so it's AI artwork, so surreal and shareable that it's spread through thousands of pages. These absurd yet viral creations are the perfect example of what's happening. AI-generated content engineered to grab attention, not really to convey a meaning. A lot of people call it AI slop error. Doesn't need to fool anyone. It just needs to fill the feed and keep you scrolling through it. The uncanny kind of repetition and the aesthetic sameness aren't a bug. They're the texture of the internet. Optimized for endless content rather than authentic communication like we're having here today.
Yeah, I think like a major strategy for social media companies is to manipulate your dopamine system. So the reason the content is the way it is now is because it gives you a dopamine spike and then you scroll on to the next thing. It reduces your attention span and it gives you that hit. It makes you feel good. It makes you perk up a little bit. And over time, you can deplete your dopamine. Your attention span gets smaller and smaller. And then I argue if you watch too much content, especially AI generated content, there's always like an underlying, kind of weaving an underlying message behind it. The point you in a direction. And though it may not be take a hard right turn here, but you may just get slightly nudged to the right. And over time, you're going to start to think that you're coming up with these beliefs on your own. But in retrospect, if you dig down into it, what you're going to find is that over time, over days, weeks, months, and even years, that you're subconsciously taking in to what this algorithm is pushing towards you. And you're really not coming to these conclusions your own unless you're rooted in something. But I want to go back to some of the stuff I found about these bots. So apparently there's 6 different levels of bots. The first one is just your basic dumb script bot. They call those level 1 bots. And that's about 30 to 35% of all the bots on the internet. And they're just simple if-then commands. There's really no learning. There's no memory and there's no decision making. Level 2 bots are rule-based bots and they make up about 40% of the bot traffic out there. So it follows roughly 100 to 10,000 lines of if-this command. So if you see this, do that. Still zero learning. It's just a binary choice that it has to make. And if it sees what it's looking for, then we'll move on to the next line of code until it gets to the end. But again, it's not learning. It's not communicating. It's just doing simple commands. Then you have the level 3 bots, which are the lightweight ML bots. So they're trained once on data and then their programming is froze, but it can classify, but there's no reasoning. Then this is where you start seeing the AI come in. So level 4 bots, LLM powered bots. These are relatively newer. It came about around early 2020s. These are like your ChatGPT-3, Autobots Unite, but they run actual transformer models. So they can write essays, hold conversations, impersonate humans pretty convincingly. But I think if you have a long enough conversation with a level 4 bot, you're going to suss it out pretty quick if you have above average intelligence. And so this is where it gets scary. And I can see a lot of potential problems, especially economically and probably psychologically for some people. But you have the level 5 bots, they're autonomous AI agents. So these are relatively new, just this year. These bots are not just for answering questions like a ChatGPT model, but they use a plan, they use tools, they browse the live web, they send emails, they book flights, they run code, they remember across sessions. They're true AI employees. So these account for roughly 1-3%, but they're projected to grow 10 times year over year. And just go back to the level 4 bots real quick, the LLM powered, they account for about 12-15% of the bot traffic. But the level 5 bots, essentially, you're going to quote unquote employ one. I'm sure they're going to charge for this. So you can simply go into your search engine, say, I want the cheapest flight to, let's just say, Atlanta. And it's going to go through all the websites. It will book it for you as long as it has your information, which it will, and pay for it. And you're just going to have to type a query. Very useful. But I can see how this in the long term can eliminate a lot of jobs that people are doing at the moment. And then the final level that I uncovered was level 6 bots. These are these botnets, these zombie fleets. These are just armies of compromised devices or cloud VMs, virtual machines, running any and all of the above. So they're used from level 1 bots all the way down to level 5 bots. And these are the bots that try to program and influence our decisions, our elections, our thoughts. And we can get later into some of the conspiracies, which at this point, I don't think they're conspiracies, about how people use and deploy these zombie fleets.
So I think that's happening today. I think level 5 is almost the norm. I'll tell you a little story. So obviously, prior to my current job, I worked at Amazon Web Services. We're almost going back a decade now. So technology moves at a very fast clip. So the stuff I'm talking about today is antiquated. You might as well be working on a big old tower PC that sitting on your desk like we grew up with as kids. But even back then, a lot of people think, okay, they're crawling my words and they're putting a bunch of words together, make it sound fancy and pushing it out. But even back then, I was teaching a machine how to see. We were feeding security camera footage into it and it'd be asking me questions. What is this? And I remember teaching security cameras of what people look like. They would take different stills. They would analyze it and say, is that a person or is that a dog or is that a whatever? And I would have tons of people just teaching this machine how to see. And it started as very basic. If you sat down with a five-year-old and said, that's a person. And they're like, he's black, white, or indifferent. Like, I don't, is that the same thing? And you would go through these very minor steps. But as we got after about 6 months to a year, as we got out to the other side of it, it was very on point. Like, it could tell the difference between a person, a dog, a car. Like, it could identify, which was more important to us, weapons. It could identify guns and knives and batons. It actually saved one of the facilities that I was working at where the cameras were deployed. We had an employee that was terminated from their job. He got pissed off after getting fired, walked out of the facility, went to the trunk of his car and retrieved the shotgun. He grabbed the shotgun and was walking back to the facility. The AI system picked it up and said, this man has a shotgun outside the door, and immediately locked down the facility so he couldn't get back in. By the time he returned to the door, he couldn't open the door. It was locked. He stood there for a little bit. There were high security locks. He probably knew he couldn't get back in, and eventually came up, threw a shotgun in his car and rolled out of the facility. But because of the way we trained our AI system, it made that identification and locked down that facility. So what we're talking about today is not just crawling words. It's they know how to hear. Like many years ago when I was in law enforcement, they have things that pick up sound and they make a determination if it's a gunshot. Like they put them in a lot of bad neighborhoods. When gunshots start going off, people shooting at each other, it alerts law enforcement. These machines are learning how to see, how to hear, how to read, and they are becoming very sophisticated. And that was 10 years ago. You imagine what they can see today versus what I was working on a decade ago? It's getting in some scary stuff. I think once upon a time, search engines, when we talk about Google or Microsoft or what have you, were about discovery. You asked a question and Google led you to someone's answer. Now I think there's a middle layer, the human page, the blog post, the firsthand experience is being erased. What I saw was that Google itself admitted the problem in 2024. Too many pages created for search engines instead of people. The company rolled out updates to suppress low quality content, much of which was AI generated, this SEO filter designed solely for rank. But that fix really came with a twist. While Google began pursuing bad results, it also started rolling out AI-powered summaries that generated answers directly in the search engine. Instead of linking you to a creator or a journal, the system writes a condensed synthesis of the information pulled from multiple sources, many of which are themselves just AI generated. In practice, this means that both discovery and credit start to collapse. Fewer clicks go to human publishers, and more engagement really stays with the machine. That's why so many people say the internet feels a bit different today. It's not really nostalgia. It's the ground shifting right under our feet. The web architecture, once a network of human voices, is being replaced by this automated feedback loop of content and AI, and then AI trained on AI, ranked by AI. And what used to be this library is turning into a mirror for AI itself. So what we're engaging with is AI. Perhaps when I want to write a really fancy article, AI is helping you write it. And AI is involved in that entire loop. And the only thing the human has to interact with is, yeah, that sounds okay. I'll publish that. So like, where's our education coming from? I don't even know. If people are like, one of the things you talk a lot of the engineers that are Amazon today, many of them are laid off and the experts are sticking around, but the people that started or that wrote basic code and were the backbone of the online environment that today are gone. And I don't know what happens when those guys retire, but AI is so intricately involved in that. And I really worry about the future my son grows up in, because I think universal income is going to be a real thing, because I think a lot of these low to mid-level jobs are going to be gone. And I worry because a lot of the high-level jobs stick around, but what happens when those people retire? Who's going to replace them? There's no people coming up within the organization to learn the lower-level skills to get to the advanced-level skills. And it becomes like we're almost reliant upon this machine in order to function.
Yeah, the question I always ask, like, somebody's programming the AI, somebody's given these commands, even if it's a simple level one bot. Somebody is programming that, or did in the past program that code into the bot. So who's programming them? We know it's the corporations, it's Google, it's the Metas, it's the, I think to a certain extent, the government, because I think the government has a big influence on all these big mega corporations. And I think China to a certain extent too. We always talk about the almighty dollar, and it seems like if there's enough money being shuttled their way, they're going to program the bots and the AI to push the narrative in their favor. And I think we've seen plenty of those examples over the past 4 to 8 years. It's also interesting too, because you can't help when you're on social media to see people, see certain content. It seems like certain niches or certain individuals come up out of nowhere. Have you noticed that? Like, where'd this guy or girl come from? Never heard of them. Now you look at their webpage or you look at their social media page and they have 20 million followers. But a lot of those followers are bots. They're auto-following because whatever they're selling, both literally and figuratively, it falls in line with the content that the government or the powers that be want. So you have these massive bot armies that can take someone, like, let's just use your neighbor next door. He or she has a certain message that falls in line with whatever the government's trying to push. And the next thing you know, in a couple weeks, this person's all over your feeds, all over your shorts, all over YouTube, and you look at their count, followers in the millions, and people automatically assume this person is a subject matter expert. They're popular. They're important. I want to follow them and start watching their content. And right there is just an easy way to uplift the voice out of this abyss that people compete in for attention. And it also goes the other way too. So let's just think you have a message. Maybe you're on the good side of the corporations one day and you say something they don't like. Next thing you have a bot army going out to all the socials, all the internet, saying how big of an idiot you are, how you could be a racist or a sexist, or just spreading garbage about you. And then I've read plenty of articles about, oh, so-and-so just lost a million followers. Yeah, there's real people in that follower count, but guarantee you 90% of the losses are all just bots just following the line of code, unfollowing this person to make this event seem more, authentic than it really is. Just like when these people blow up, it's not true growing, it's manufactured growth. And I think it's manufactured destruction.
Yeah, 100%. If you had $20,000, I could make you have a million followers. I guarantee you could, because you can engage these bot farms and drive up your numbers inorganically. You can make people subscribe and push you to the front of the line and make people buy into the concept. It all costs money. One person sitting in Bangladesh can now make you have 100,000 downloads and push you up to the top of your category. Now, if you don't have good content, you won't sustain, like your numbers will die off eventually, but I can cut you to that front of the line. So what we're creating today with artificial intelligence is really an unfair system, where the little guys like us, that we come into the game and we start having a podcast, we're at a disadvantage if we don't engage into some of those activities. Not that we do, but if we didn't, because like we're at a disadvantage because everybody else or a lot of people are using bots to really boost their numbers to get in front of you so that you listen to them. And you see a lot of it. Like whether, hell, half the podcasts that you probably listen to today are AI generated voices that just geared right into content and can sound natural when they're having conversations. Dude.
Then on. I don't want to cut you off. I happened to accidentally run up on a podcast like that one day, probably about a month ago. So it was a topic I was interested in. So I use Apple Podcasts and you can type in like a subject line and it will pull up, like, I assume it's the most relevant topic for the subject. And probably I assume it sorts by like listens. So anyway, I'm like, okay, I saw their little thumbnail and it looked like a guy and a girl, but it was digitally rendered. And I'm listening to it and I'm like, this sounds bizarre. Like their language was, again, too perfect. The back and forth seemed a little bit scripted, but I don't necessarily see that as a red flag. I know a lot of podcasters and even people in the news read stuff, but it almost seemed too perfect. But what kind of gave it off was my radar is pinging at this point. I'm like, this, something's off. Like this seems not natural. So this is where some of the LLMs kind of break. When people talk about World War II, they do the alphanumeric WW1, like the Roman numeral side 1 and 1. So as this the male in this fake podcast was talking. He's, yeah, back in WWII. I'm like, oh, there it is. It's an AI podcast. And he also did that with Noah. He's like in the NOA or whatever the acronym is for it. But I was like, okay. I'm like, they had me there for a little bit, but pretty quickly, about 3 minutes into the podcast, I was like, the thing that is missing is the speech patterns, the tonality shifts. But once AI figures that out, we're not going to know what's real and what's not.
Yeah, or you just program it to act like that, to make mistakes. Did you know, Jay, that me and you are bots?
I
hear that
a
lot on Reddit. Yeah, we're robots. And I sell them by the way we mispronounce words and do all that stuff. We're clearly not bots because they haven't figured
out. Oh, dude, I'm half retarded. I'm lucky I can speak. Everyone accuses me of being a bot. I'm like, there, that's a compliment for me there, dude.
Right, we're saying all the words right. I think every major platform really runs on this single metric, and that is engagement. The more clicks mean more data and more ads and more revenue. As a writer that I saw called Cory Doctorow puts it, this leads to his concept in shitification, a process where platforms start out as serving others and then pivot to serve business partners and finally extract as much profit as possible from everyone that's left. At first, I think a site feels vibrant. The algorithms reward the creativity and the connection. Then the ads, the corporate priorities creep in and they feed the algorithm's shift from what you like to what keeps you there. And the spammy automation and low effort viral content thrives because they're cheap and constant. Real human posts, which take time and thought to write out, get really buried under what machines can churn out in seconds. The result isn't that it's a dead internet, it's that it's a suffocating one. Like you could sit around and write good content, but you might have one good article, and now all of a sudden it's buried under 50 AI generated ones, and you hope somebody sees your real one. So you have all this shit that's piled on top of it. And I think this is why so many users describe the web as like this repetitiveness or this soulless nature of it. It's not that people disappear. It's that the system no longer rewards being human, being authentic, kind of loses its optimization. The human web didn't die. I think it was just remodeled for efficiency and output. And more as the humans get buried in this process, what's the reward? If I'm going to write a good article and you're never going to see it, am I going to keep writing those good articles? Probably not. And what you see now, in my opinion, as I spend some time on Reddit talking about our content, talking about the conspiracies that we dive into, people think because you put some thought into something that all of a sudden you're a bot because it sounds too nice to be a real human thought. And they have a lot of skepticism towards it. And I think that's sad as well, because it's like, where's that middle ground? Do I have to act retarded in order for you to believe that I'm a person? Because only robots are smart and people are stupid. I don't know what that middle ground looks like, but it becomes very difficult to traverse that space, because though I have a lot of artificial intelligence training and background and implementation within the companies that I worked, I would never use it for like my content creation or what have you. So I just find it crazy.
Dude, like you said, it stifles creativity, and it does that just what you said. If you're going to spend hours and hours of your week trying to research, write a good article, and then it's just buried by trash content, it destroys your motivation to really try to better the world, depending on what you're trying to do. And just to have it buried underneath crap articles or just straight up lies. When I do my research for these shows, I do use AI to get some bullet points, but then I go and research them. I read. I go to the source. I prefer human sources, so I'll do a lot of research via that route, but AI will contradict itself and it will just straight up lie to you. So you have to be very careful with your research on AI, because it's that 80-20 rule. Like 80% of it might be pretty good. The other 20% is just made up. And there have been stories about AI hallucinating and just making crap up out of the blue. I don't know why that happens. I think sometimes it does it just to screw with you. But so one thing I did find out, so to create a bot back in 2024, it was $6. Now in 2025, it costs about 12 cents to buy a bot and put it out to work. 12 cents. So if you had $500, you spent $500 a month, you could have thousands of bots pushing whatever agenda or liking or disliking whatever post or content that you want it to do. It's just wild how cheap it's gotten. There have been some concerns about these bots actually replicating themselves, which we can get into that in a little bit, but just want to lay the groundwork. So you can deploy these bot armies, especially with these level 5 and level 4 bots. They're smart enough to procreate in the digital sense. I know a lot of social media sites like X and Reddit and Beta and all the big ones you can think of, they have a problem with when they remove bots from the platform, it's an ever-losing battle. Because in this, as they're saying, removing a million bots, another 200-300 million have been made in the amount of time it took for them to remove that relatively large number, but comparatively speaking, it's very small. And they start to self-replicate and proliferate the internet, and it's wild. And it's just nuts. And I just kind of want to hit some of the numbers that are disclosed. So back in December of 2016, Facebook admitted to having 100 million plus fake accounts. And that's what they're admitting to. And that's pretty wild. And in the first quarter one of 2017, Instagram hit 600 million users, and they admitted to the 8% of them being fake. And we're going back, what's that, 8 years ago now? You can imagine that 8% now is probably well over 50. In the COVID lockdowns between 2020 and 2021, 2 billion new social media accounts were made. That is, I think, statistically impossible. There's 8 billion people in the world. Maybe 3-4 billion uses the internet on a daily basis. And out of that 2 billion new social accounts that were created in those 2 years, they assume 70% of those are from bots. And with the proliferation of ChatGPT, it's just getting worse. And a lot of people think between 2023 and 2025, which is now, LLM bots, the cheap cloud experience, and the exponential growth, we're at the point of no return. The bots have conquered and won the internet. It's just a matter of time until they are 90% of the traffic. And they actually, right now, they're saying it's 52% of the traffic. They're saying is late 2026, it could account for up to 70% of the traffic.
Yeah, when you think about it, the bots can do anything that you can do online, perhaps better. They can click all the same buttons. They can create all the same accounts. I remember way back in the day when I was in law enforcement, I had fake social medias. I was a very attractive female that all the gangsters really wanted to talk to. And they didn't realize they were talking to a bearded, ugly man. But that's what I was. But now you could have thousands of attractive women that are flooding your feeds and you don't know who you're clicking on. And perhaps you could even create like AI pornography. I know some people are gearing towards that angle. Hell, ChatGPT itself said they might be getting into the adult market. It's a handful of crazy out there, and they can do it a million times faster than we can. And everything is about engagement, and that's how people survive now, is through social media. Most people are engaging, I think, multiple times a day with unauthentic accounts. And when you engage with it and you give it a thumbs up or somebody else does, it gets pushed to the feed and more people interact with it. I saw this story in 2024. Researcher Renee, I'm going to butcher her last name, but it was D'Oreste, John Goldstein, and Patrick Rede from Stanford and Georgetown decided to test whether algorithm feeds were amplifying AI junk. They deliberately followed and interacted with a handful of Facebook pages known for posting low-quality AI content images. Those strange, hyper-colorful pictures of angels and food and fantasy scenes. Within days, their feeds transform. Without liking, commenting, or sharing, Facebook's algorithm began recommending dozens of similar AI image pages. Their timelines started to fill with endless machine-made art, none of which showed normal human engagement. No comments, no conversations, just this endless noise. As Neiman's lab summarized, within days of visiting those pages, Facebook's algorithm recommended reams of other AI-generated content. It was controlled glimpses into how quickly the system can trap users into this automated kind of echo chamber. Proof that you don't need to believe in this grand conspiracy to feel like the bots are really starting to take over your feeds. And that's how I see a lot of them in my Facebook reels. And I talk about somebody does this AI-generated content that has millions of followers of these monkeys that have comedy and it's funny. I passed it like at one point when I was like flipping through the reels looking at content. And now I must see a dozen a day when I'm like just bored and flipping through my Facebook stuff. And it starts to fill up. And a lot of them are very popular with the front door cameras like Nest or whatever people have, Ring, where people make fake videos with that and they're supposed to be funny. But people try to pass them off as real. Look what we do to people that steal our packages. Like, and most of that shit is fake. We're like exploding packages and all this stuff. And it's crazy how fast that stuff infiltrates you, gets in front of you, and then it starts starts to change people's opinions, because now you used to be just like, I hate people that steal packages. I'm going to call the cops, to be like, maybe I should punish them. And when they come to my front door, shoot them or do something wild. It starts to gear your thinking differently. And that's why with my AI background, I'm a strong advocate that you should vote in person, because I worry about when you can cast your vote completely online of how the algorithm is going to kind of just make you vote for whoever, you know, the machine wants you to vote for, versus casting that ballot in person and having a fair election system, because I think it will be persuaded. And there's outside interests too, where there's huge armies in North Korea and Russia that want to have a specific candidate in office, and they're going to try to influence you to do that one way or another.
Yeah, dude, it's wild. There was a ByteDance internal leak in August of this year, and TikTok admitted to 1.9 million fake accounts being created a day. That's freaking astronomical, man. And then in the third quarter of this year, 2025, there are roughly 19 million domains that are 100% AI content farms. So it's just, like we said, it's just the proliferation is just out of control. And I think you see a lot of these bot armies come out during election time, either promoting a candidate or bashing a candidate. And it really goes back to this divide and conquer strategy that's being used against societies. You project this false dichotomy that you can either choose A or B. There's never anything in the middle ground, even though I think, regardless of your political affiliation, I really don't like to get into politics at all. I think politics is like the WWE. These guys get in the wrestling ring, they beat each other up and act like they hate each other. And when they come out, they go out and drink and party and hang out with their best friends. It's just what our politics is. But they put you under this false dichotomy. So it makes you more tribal. A lot of us, unfortunately, a lot of us are pretty isolated. We hold up into our homes. We might go out to our jobs and talk to people there. But you go back 30, 40, 50 years ago, people interacted in the neighborhoods. They played outside. Kids played outside. You talked to your neighbors. Now people are more isolated, and that false dichotomy kind of creates a tribalistic nature. So whereas they may not feel like they have anything in common with their neighbor or some of their friends or their coworkers, they feel like they can relate to the, yeah, I'm pro-Trump. Yeah, I'm pro Biden or Harris, and they cling to that ideology to fill that void in their psyche. And it's just basic human psychology, man. Like, you create the fear, and then that fear, you create the emotion, then you try to create the belonging, and then you just repeat it over and over until you get this person essentially brainwashed into thinking and believing the things you want them to believe. And this is what these bots do. It's like you said, you saw this stupid monkey show come up over and over. That's repetition. It created an emotion. You felt happy. You thought it was funny. And next thing you know, you're just being spammed. And that's a very, very light example of this. But you can't look through social media anymore without seeing fist fights. And I hate it when I'm scrolling and I see the Ukraine-Russian war and these poor dudes getting blown up by drones or getting killed, and people are like, yeah, they deserve it. No, those guys fighting that war don't deserve any of that, man. You think they want to go fight in that war? These are just essentially innocent people being murdered because two sides can't figure out something stupid like land or whatever. And I know it's a lot more complicated than that. I know I'm simplifying it, but for us to root for someone to get their freaking faces blown off in the middle of a field when they're really not the problem, man. It's like these poor guys.
It's a singular man that's the problem, or a singular men that are the problem. Most people are persuaded by two things in life, love or hate. And that's what you're going to be very passionate about. If we talk about Christ, he says, I spit lukewarm Christians out of my mouth. I want you to have passion for this. And I worry when bots really become that baseline. Years before generative AI really took over the headline, engineers inside of YouTube were already grappling with this chilling possibility. They called it the inversion. As reported by journalist Max Reed, some YouTube employees feared that bot traffic might one day become so dominant that the platform's own systems would begin to treat bots as normal, as real humans instead of anomalies. Employees feared YouTube systems would begin to regard bot traffic as real. This, I don't think, was paranoia. It was just math of what they were seeing. If bots are the majority of what the system sees, algorithms trained to detect normal engagement eventually normalize the inauthentic. Images in the ecosystem where views, comments, and watch times are mostly synthetic, and the algorithm starts to optimize for that. It's not that the platforms would choose to serve bots. It would just evolve to please what it thinks is its audience. The result is the internet's optimized for automation rather than people. The inversion was meant as a warning, and it might have almost been prophecy, because I think that's what we're seeing today, is that kind of bots are serving up bots, and you don't know what's reality when you look at something. And AI, whether it's generating written content or visual content, It's getting better every day, man. And I fear what it's going to be like in 5 years. You're just not going to be able to tell. And kind of skipping towards the end of the show of what I say is, man, you got to put down your phone and just start experiencing life again. Go back to maybe even a little bit before we were kids, where you're playing outside, engaging in your communities, because at least then it's authentic. I don't think there's anything about online of whether people chase after the goodness or the evil that's out there is authentic in any way, shape, form, or fashion. And half the time, you don't even know if it's somebody pretending to be somebody else or perhaps just a made-up machine. But I think it's all scary and all quite evil. And like you said earlier, it's just feeding on your dopamine. Like, how do we make you click? How do we make you engage just a little bit more? And it almost turns into a drug. Like, dopamine's a huge drug in a sense, and people chase after it, whether it's they're jumping off buildings or doing heroin or whatever the case may be, but people chase after it. And that's really what they engage with. Hell, Amazon built a business off. It is like, how quickly can we make you click purchase, taking advantage of you in opportune times? I don't know, man. It's a scary world. And I just wish people would put down the damn phones and listen to normal people talk and do real life.
Yeah, man. I don't think I know I don't engage with any posts. I don't write a comment. I might, I'd like a podcast. I might five star. Go ahead and five star us while you're at it, guys. Like, I'll look at content, and even the content I think is good, I don't sit there and write a comment. And I don't think most people do. And I think a lot of the comments are actually from bots. And then sometimes it's entertaining to look at the comment threads, especially on Yahoo News, because I think a lot of those articles are AI generated and people arguing about the article or whatever the topic is. And then every once in a while, you can tell someone, a human, it triggers an actual human. The next thing you know, there's probably a 99% chance that this human is arguing with a bot. And like you said, I think that human connection is very few and far between in these comment sections on these forums. So more often than not, you're probably just arguing with a bot who's just trying to trigger you. And in triggering you, it creates more content and blows up the post and then belabors the point that they're trying to make. But I kind of want to give a couple quotes from the people who actually control this. Sam Altman in May of 2025, and I'm quoting here, "In 3 to 5 years, most of what you read online will be synthetic. We are not ready for this." Elon Musk said Twitter before 2020 was 80% bots. He claimed to remove 3 billion accounts, and he says it himself, Twitter or X still feels dead. The guy who owns Reddit, Alexis, I don't even know how to say his last name, but Alexis, he says Reddit is 60% bots and 30% AI content. The other 10% is just, like I said, arguing with bots. And this is the thing that sticks out in my head, because I noticed this a few years ago. So the Google VP, I didn't state his name, but it was in an internal memo leaked in October of 2025, said 41% of the top 10 results are now AI generated. We cannot remove them faster than they appear. So 5-10 years ago, when I would type something, and like when I search for very specific things, because I find conspiracy very interesting, I find religion very interesting, and you can find all kinds of great content just by typing in specific words. Like, I'm looking for, I don't know, we can just go back to our last episode, tell me about the history of Nimrod, and you could find very unique sources. And some of the websites looked like they're created by humans. They weren't all pretty, but they had great information. Now when you type something in, you get very sanitized results that come up. They're very secular if it's a religion type topic, and when it's conspiracy, it's seems to pull everything up, debunking it. So All the good information is buried thousands and thousands of layers deep, and you can't find them anymore. There are so many good websites I had back in the day that now I can't even find. And I assume they're probably dead because whoever created them, whoever spent the time compiling this information said, no one's looking at it. So why am I going to waste my time? And it's because the people who program the AI, who give it its logic, is embedding a message in there. And it's taking your ability to find the good content away and either giving you something that's secular, maybe even anti-Christ, and something that is debunking conspiracies because they don't want you to know the truth.
It goes back to that old saying, if you are a sheep and you follow along with the common popular narrative now, you probably will never know a difference. But that's not the way we're called to live our lives. We're not called to be sheep and follow along with the secular world. We're called to challenge it and to follow a more specific narrative. Like you said, and I hate to tell you folks, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably end conspiracy theories, and the algorithm out there wants to deprioritize you. And more in fact, they want to demonetize you. So people like us today, when we're talking about conspiracies, they want to suppress this information. They don't want you to hear this. It's not along with the mainstream narrative. We're not serving up LGBTQ on a platter. We're not following along with all those mainstream things. And because of that, they want to call us bad guys and suppress this information. It reminds me of the current company that I work with that shall remain nameless at this juncture in time. But I went to Sam Altman's executives at his company, and I said, I know there is a way to watermark the information that you're putting out there, meaning that when you write something, there's a way for me to be able to determine through a algorithmic function that, you know, the LLM wrote this material so I could identify it. And he says, yes, absolutely. We actually have it built. Like, we have this way built that says, if we wrote this content, we would be able to tell that we wrote this content. But we've decided to not enforce it. We're not going to do it. We're not going to help people. We want it to just blend in with the narrative. So we're not going to help you make a determination if a human wrote this or if our machine wrote this, because it's not a priority. So they have the capability to watermark this material, but they're refusing to do so, even in like high stakes environments where it matters. If I'm trying to hire somebody that's a good writer, and I want to make sure that they wrote it and not some machine, they won't help you with that. There's certain other LLMs out there that have that ability and will give you that function to make those determinations. But the biggest ones out there will not. And if we can kind of trace this source, right, to food or art or aircraft parts, and I always ask myself, why can't we trace this information? And I think the conversation around provenance, knowing where a piece of content comes from, is heating up. Like, I'm not the only one asking these questions. And I think new standards for digital watermarking and cryptographic signing and proof of human attestations are emerging. Like, more companies are thinking about this to be able to watermark it, especially as they get into the legal system. The government now is a big proponent and user of artificial intelligence, and they have actually a mandate to improve their business processes through DOGE to embrace this philosophy. And as it works through the government, it starts working through the legal systems, companies can kind of get in trouble for what's going out there. Even if Jay is interacting with it, putting it on some nefarious website, if LLM, if somebody's company wrote it, they could be held liable for damages if it gets put out there. Ideal simple. And I think what's most important is make every image, article, and video verifiable at the metadata level. I don't have to say that this AI service created this video for me, but I should have a way to investigate and find it. So if I have a question that a video came out and said, vote for Biden for office, I should be able to at least look and say, okay, AI created this and not Jay down the street on his computer. And now, whether it's the Adobe content authentication initiative or the open protocols that tag media with human authorship, ultimately the goal is the same: restore the trust in our polluted information and ecosystem. I think these tools won't fix the web overnight, but I think they create the accountability piece that we're missing today, really, in a world where AI can mimic almost anyone. And people are going out there, it's like, I want to patent my voice and my image and my likeness. We shouldn't have to do that. Those are unique to our character and human as individuals as we are. But we're in a state where it's not quite illegal yet to, I want to just pretend to be Jay for a couple of minutes and try to get this job or whatever the case may be. That law is not completely written today. So I think there's a possibility we could hold folks accountable for this, but I don't know, man. I feel like always the big money wins.
Yeah. So I'm a big stats guy. So forgive me if I'm boring you with these statistics, but so we're going to look at a particular platform, several of them, and I'll give you the human percentage and the bot AI percentage. So something that we all use every day, Google search, 35% human, 60% bot AI. Twitter, 36 to 48% human, 52 to 64% bot AI. Reddit, 42% human, 58% AI. YouTube comments, 28% human, 72% AI. Instagram Explore, 33% human, 67% AI. Discord, and this is where you start getting into having more humans than bots, but Discord, 55% human, 45% AI. And private WhatsApp groups, 96% human, 4% AI. And then you have some of these niche forums like Something Awful, Old PHBBB, 91% human, 9% AI. So as you can see, most of these platforms that most people interact with on a daily basis are heavily bot and AI infiltrated, projecting out the future from where we stand now. So by 2026, which is only a month away or so, 60 to 75% of traffic is going to be bot traffic. 2027, they're projecting that the first platform reaches 90% bot accounts. It's probably going to be X or something new that gets created. 2028 is going to be bot versus bot internet. And at that point, humans are going to leave for gated communities, which, I mean, gated virtual communities, aka other software platforms, other group text, group chat forum type pages. And then by 2030, they're projecting that 99% of all the internet and everything on it is going to be synthetic. So at that point, I don't even know how you can go on it and expect to get any sort of true creativity that comes from a human mind and not a bot mind. It's just wild, bro. It's just the internet is dead, and it's, or maybe it's not dead. It's gasping on its final breath, and it's about to have a cardiac arrest here in the next few years.
I personally think it's dead as hell, but there's enough like trueness mixed in there that still makes it feel alive.
One of the things that's here real quick. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but these are official document. So X claims to take down 15 million spam accounts a month, but there's 80 to 120 million bot accounts, spam accounts created the same month. So that's a net of 65 to 105 million. TikTok, like I said before, 19 to 20 million taken down a month, 150 to 200 million created a month. So there you go. There's a net of 130 to 180 million. Instagram, 12 million a month, new bot accounts a month, 90 to 110 million. So you can't keep up with the pace. It doesn't matter how many you take down and identify. And I'm sure when you're taking down accounts, at that level, you're probably destroying some actual human's account in the process too. So this is going to be more of a reason for people not to want to go mess around on these social media apps.
Yeah. One of the things you're talking about is true authentication. So you said the numbers drop in Discord and WhatsApp groups and private kind of Facebook communities. Those numbers drop because, oh, I know Jay as a person, so it's more authentic. And bots haven't had the opportunity to infiltrate it. One of the things that kind of crossed my mind is, could this be a blessing in disguise? Meaning, when we were kids, the web wasn't really a big thing. All the kids played outside. Could it become such trash and so much garbage out there that machines are just curating all the content that you see and writing all the content that you see, that people go back to that?
Yeah, man, I hope so. I don't see how that happens now. You can't go to work without using the internet anymore. People are becoming so reliant on AI, essentially do their jobs for them, that a lot of people can't think. Like, AI psychosis is a real thing. People talk to it, to how to off themselves. They have conversations with it. They're filling voids. Some people claim they have AI girlfriends and boyfriends. Like, it's triggering some sort of mental illness that we as humans are not capable of handling. And I think it's part of the loneliness epidemic, the destruction of the family, rampant divorce. People are just isolated more and more than ever. I pray to God that the internet crashes and that people decide to start going outside, start meeting people organically, start becoming involved in church groups or hobbies or something. But I think we're so inserted into the matrix anymore, especially with what most of us do for work. A lot of us don't work with our hands. On the backside of that coin, I think AI is going to be so prevalent, especially in the next 5 years, a lot of people are not going to have work anymore. Like, we were talking about these AI level 5 bot agents. Customer service has been just destroyed by AI. Coders, like you said, have been destroyed by AI. I don't necessarily believe the unemployment numbers. Right now, we're sitting at 4.1%. It's roughly 7 to 8 million Americans. But that does not take into account people who've stopped looking for work. If you look at that number, it's 21 million people. So you add those two together, it's 28 to 29 million people who don't have jobs. And a big chunk of that number is administrative type work. Now, bots code themselves, so they don't need coders because bots understand how to do it. They do it, they create, and they proliferate. And the next big wave is going to be delivery drivers. I love truckers. In my previous life, I worked with a ton of them, the best people in the world. And when you have, I don't know, 1 to 2 million truck drivers, if not more, delivery service is huge. And the ultimate goal is to get them phased out. They want to have these autonomous delivery drivers, essentially the truck just driving the freight, AI forklifts who go into the warehouses, load the pallets onto the truck. What are you going to do when you have unemployment rate of 55, 60%? One of two things happen. You start a war, or you go to universal basic income, or there's a huge revolt. So we're coming up to a precipice that's going to be very dangerous, and very tricky to navigate. And that's what makes me worry, because with AI taking over all the jobs, especially as technology grows exponentially, what are people going to do? That's the question that scares me. Forget about all this psychological manipulation, all this boosting people up on the algorithm, taking them down. The real important part is, in 5 to 10 years, when most of us can't find a job because AI is taking it all over, And there's 350 million people in this country, man. That's the scary part. That's when it gets scary. And even right now, kids coming out of college, if you want to break that out, they're setting at anywhere from 6.5 to 8% unemployment rate. That's almost double what people that are not of college age. So you have this big group of people that are hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt because they took on student loans, because they were taught that the only way to advance in this world is to get a college degree, and they're coming out with nothing to do. You get a college degree, you get to work at Starbucks. Great. Now you're $150,000 in debt. You get to serve coffee to people. What do you do with a population that's of military age that can't find work? There's not a lot of good outcomes at the end of that road, man. And that's what scares me. And like I said, fast forward, what happens when you have 100 million people that don't have work? Are you just going to let them be homeless and not pay their bills? Something has to happen. I don't really know what the answers are, man, but it's getting scary because it's coming quick.
It's coming after the middle and lower classes. Like some it always of the does. Upper level. Yeah. And I think your kids have a little bit of blessing because they're a bit older than mine. Hopefully they can get ahead of the curve. But my kids being so young, I really worry about what world they grow up in. And I think the world is that it's going to be less about education and more about working with your hands.
100%.
Like what you can going out and repairing an AC might be the job that makes you $150,000 a year versus being a lawyer or something that can be automated out. It's really scary. And I don't know. And I think when the internet was invented, you're like, yeah, that's pretty cool. It might change the way I get to work from home now, which is awesome. But it's still this authentic experience. But I'm leading the forefront of trying to figure out how I can make AI do it. Right. Which I hate. But if you don't do it, you lose your job. But I'm almost lost for words. And I talk about this with my wife all the time. It's what kind of world are they going to grow up in? Because you want your kids to grow up and go to college and do those things. But you even talk about you get a college education, and you work at Starbucks. Hell, 5 years ago, I was living in Asia and robots were serving me coffee. So I went to a restaurant the other day with my wife and we went to the University of Maryland football game and robots brought our food out to us at the table. These robots are coming for jobs. You're seeing Elon Musk create, I don't forget what he calls his droid that he's creating that's going to be that makes him the big trillionaire in the future. But they're going to start automating everything. And truck drivers, I'm surprised they still have to because my car can drive itself. It can take me anywhere I want to go. And all I have to do is supervise, which means look at it while it does its thing. So that future is closer than most people think, especially as you get into the 40 plus range. People say, it'll be 20 years away. Technology moves very fast. And I think beneath the noise, the everyday kind of social media chatter really lies in the kind of the coordinated undercurrent. And what we're seeing is the troll farms and the organized psyops running really at an industrial scale. These are not like random trolls in basements. They're structured teams, often with governments or corporate backing, running thousands of synchronized accounts really designed to manipulate perception. From Russia's internet research agency to domestic influence contractors in the US and Asia, these tactics are similar. Amplified division, target emotion, and seed false consensus. And these accounts really flood the comment sections, hijack trending hashtags, and post in this like perfect rhythm to push narratives that appear grassroots at the times, but they're really not. And I think what makes this effective is scale and being subtle about it. You don't need millions of accounts to sway opinion, just a few thousand working with precision, and they can make an ideal look like a movement. And algorithms read into that and give it engagement, and you start seeing all these like content. So not only are we losing our jobs, but we're persuading opinion, right? At a mass scale. You remember back in the day, somebody'd be like, I want to vote for Trump. And they'd be like, oh, you're a lunatic. Don't vote for Trump or whatever your like personal politics were. But you hear from one or two people. Now, if I really didn't want you to vote for Trump, I can make 1,000 AI bots tell you in 1,000 different formats of not to vote for him. And perhaps if you are a sheep, your opinion's going to be persuaded. And you're like, I'm not going to cast my vote for him. I don't want to do that. And I think it's scary because it's herding everybody together to make the one person mind. I don't know who's controlling it, but one person's mind perhaps hallucinating. I don't know, but it's crazy. Out of work people with falling into one of criteria of love or hate, being emboldened by it, you got a lot of time to drive division and start a war or whatever if that's the case. Like the FBI has admitted to such in the 1960s of putting almost fake bots out there to persuade your opinion, to drive division, to influence your actions. So we've seen it before, but we've never seen it on the scale that exists today. And hell, in 5 years, what's that scale going to look like? Because the speed of innovation is moving very quickly, because now instead of having one coder write something crazy, I can have 100,000 coders work 24 hours a day instead of 8, write the same code and make you believe it. So that scale, that duchotomy of our economy is really exaggerated now. And that's the speed of advancement is just really out of control and what the possibilities are for the future.
Yeah, man, you're talking about, if we're talking about unemployment now, I don't want to get down too deep down the rabbit hole, but think about this. 100 million people don't have a job. So you decide you want to become an HVAC tech. People can't pay for HVAC. So the problem compounds itself. People don't have money. They can't pay for services. Yeah, we're short mechanics, diesel mechanics, car mechanics, any sort of mechanic you can think of. If people can't buy a car or they can't pay for the car to get fixed, what's the job for? The economy is very intimately interwoven within itself. So if people can't spend money, even if you have a job or a skill that is in demand, the demand's just not there to fill it because there's nobody that has money to pay for those services. So you just see how it turns into a vicious cycle. But no, I do agree with you. I think people, especially younger people that may be listening, become a welder, become an electrician, become a plumber, become an HVAC tech. Even now, those people make a ton of money compared to some of these white collar workers. But this is my conspiracy part of my mind coming out. You know how big the education industrial complex is. It's not by accident that college is super expensive and the government gives out grants and the banks need it to pad their books with loaning money out to people. I guarantee you, in the next 5 years, these colleges are going to offer degrees in HVAC. They're going to offer degrees in electronics and to become an electrician. So that big education complex is just going to find a way to bring these kids in, to get them in debt, to get these skills. And you won't be able to walk the path of an electrician without having a college degree. Again, nobody's going to hire you unless you have this stupid piece of paper that you paid $150,000 for. It's just a vicious cycle, bro. Vicious. It's just to keep people on that hook, to keep their head barely above water, to keep them fighting just to survive.
Yeah, it's almost like a version of indentured servitude.
Really, it's
how
a great
can we
analogy.
Get a piece of the game? My wife is a lawyer and she makes really good money. But at the end of the day, no one will have her fancy law degree. We make about the same because she has several hundred thousand dollars in debt and we pay a mortgage payment every month for her college loans. And we will pay that for the next 20 years. It's going to be forever. And it's this big thing that hangs over us. And yeah, people are always going to find a way to monetize it, monetize your success, monetize your intelligence, and keep hanging on to your coat strings. And I think the best case scenario is you learn to work with your hands, learn to fix robots, HVACs, whatever the case may be. And perhaps people are employed, but they'll give you a little bit of their universal income. And perhaps you could build your own little business and make better than what the government handouts are going to be. I think that's the best case scenario for our future, unless everything collapses in on itself.
I do think the AI bubble will collapse, just like the dot-com bubble. That collapse, I think, is a little bit different because AI actually has infrastructure. It has the server farms. It has all the infrastructure around to keep it cool with the water and the facilities. There is real infrastructure there, but we should do an episode, like a short on the economy, because I do think the AI bubble will collapse here in the next couple of years. But I don't think it will be as catastrophic as that dot-com bubble. I mean, dot-com bubble is just a bunch of internet pages that you could create for back then a few hundred bucks. And everybody thought it was the next. Yeah, it's like crypto now. There's millions of cryptos out there. There's only going to be one or two that are actually successful. But to get back to some of the scary stuff on the kind of the dark side of this dead internet theory. So some of the proposed solutions, which make me nervous. So there's some pretty innocuous ones, like making people pay a fee to surf the internet or whatever. That would suck. But you're not going to have these bot scammers and AI farms wanting to pay thousands of dollars just to let millions of bots to push content. So that's one of them. But the other one, the scary one, is proof of humanity. So this is going to use biometric tools like scan your face, scan your iris, maybe a thumbprint. So now they're going to know everything that you're doing. Not that I'm convinced they know everything you're doing now, but this will be the rollout, the solution. Like, we need your face, we need your fingerprint, we need your biometrics. And that's one of the kind of scary solutions. Two is they're going to tokenize you on the blockchain. So unless you're on the blockchain, your personality, your persona, your credentials, if you're not on the blockchain, you're not going to be able to use any sort of internet service. Again, So I think this starts to point to the mark of the beast. Can't buy, sell, or trade. Most, I don't know, how many packages have I had delivered today or this week or this month from Amazon? I buy a lot of stuff from there. I am part of the problem because I don't go to my local store. I enjoy the convenience of Amazon, but that has been a big part of destroying, especially our local economies, by going to these mega corporations to buy. But once you get on the blockchain, they're going to know everything you're going to do, and you're going to have that to get on the internet, to surf, to research, do whatever. That's when I think you start getting into this beast system. And you talked about the watermarks. I think that could be a good intermediary. They're going to always point you at the end of the road. It's going to be the most intrusive system possible, because they want to know where you're at, what you're doing. They want all your information, and they want to control you. And it's, I guarantee it's going to be biometrics, and you're going to be tokenized on the blockchain. And then that's when it gets really dangerous.
Yeah, I think it's inevitably that it's going to be forced. If you want to drive a car or make purchases or whatever, we're seeing a lot of that movement now in digital IDs. Everybody's going to a digital ID. There's many states that already have digital IDs that are in play, which requires, guess what? Biometric data. They have a picture of your face. They have your fingerprints. They have all kinds of stuff that's already there today. So I think we're ramping up to that. And it's almost, if you want to get out on the wide web, you almost have to have a proof of humanity in some way, shape, or form. So it's scary. Like, to me, it's not worth for me to surf online to give you my DNA or whatever makes my true identity. I don't know, man. It's going to get real crazy, and I think it's going to get real crazy real quick.
Yeah, man. I think we're at the tipping point. I think we're at the peak of that mountain, and we're going to start sliding downhill pretty freaking quick, and it's going to just keep getting faster and faster.
We go back to where we started this adventure with podcasting, when we were talking about Project Bluebeam. And don't believe everything you hear. Don't believe everything that's out there. Because let me tell you what, about 85% of it is bullshit. So you got to have that discernment to drive in there, yeah, to say, is this true or not? With everything that you see. I've seen so many fake videos of Donald Trump saying one thing or another, and about a tenth of them are true, like he actually said them. And most people, a lot of people, especially people that aren't like real into the technology, just don't get it, especially the older generation that just weren't around this kind of stuff when it was being developed. They just don't understand it. And I wonder how much that persuades their opinion as well.
Oh, dude, it has to be huge. It's definitely huge. I think our age group, like in the 30s to 40s, we can see it and suss it out. I think if you're like you're 55 plus, it starts to be kind of become a challenge, because when we were kids, the beginning of the internet, it was more of a pain in the butt to get on the internet than it was worth the time, right? Now, like my kids, your kids, I think they have a much better eye for it because they grew up with it. They can see what's real big. Yeah. I get a feeling, just like that example I gave with the podcast, like something doesn't seem right, but I'm sure my kids could suss it out in half the time. If you're older, you might think, oh, this is pretty cool. I haven't heard this before. These guys and girls, or they speak clearly, they have good content. And I think eventually they would get to that point, but they may be two or three episodes in before they figure out it's bot. I don't know, man. It's crazy. Something has to be done. I just know the solution. I'm a big believer in problem reaction solution. They cause the problem, they wait for your reaction, and they already have the solution in place. They just need you to be outraged or be inconvenienced enough to demand some sort of action. And they're like, oh, here it is in the pretty box with a bow. And it's a trap.
Yeah, I did a short on this not too long ago, but it was cloning. But one of the stories was that this older folks, they were in their 70s. What they thought was their daughter called them and said she had been kidnapped. She was screaming. She was panicking. And they believed it was her because it sounded like her. They weren't used to this voice cloning technology. And they ended up paying a $20,000 ransom to set her free.
No, man.
And all it was is somebody just scraped her voice online and sent them this panic call at 2 a.m. in the middle of the night. And they believed it was their daughter and he was going to be murdered. And I sympathize with that a little bit. Could you imagine your kid calling you and pleading you for mercy on your cell phone number? There's some part of you that's, oh, shit. And one of the reasons why she believed it is because she picked up her phone and called her daughter. And her daughter didn't answer. And she just surmised, because my daughter didn't answer her cell phone, even though it just happens to be that she was like away on vacation, so she didn't pick it up. She didn't answer because she's been kidnapped. So I got to pay for this. And so you're seeing a lot. You can search online. There's thousands of stories where people are being conned out of this by people cloning their voice or their likeness in videos and stuff. And every technology out there gets used for something bad. And we're seeing it now. A lot of this is almost organized crime. What we saw, what we still see with drug dealers and shipping, like anything that you can make money off of. Just like the cartel dills and avocados. Anything that you can make money off of, they're going to take advantage of. And it's really just a cesspool, man. And it's a scary place.
Yeah, man. It's scary. I know probably 90% of the bot activity is just to take your money, market products to you. I heard one interesting fella, his name escapes me again. I should be better at crediting people with their ideas. And this is your idea. Let me know. I'll credit you in a different episode. But he claims that the internet already has an avatar of us. Like, they know how we think. They know what our purchasing habits are. So they know David likes XYZ. They know Jay likes ABC. You know, I'm convinced our phones listen to us. You ever have a conversation with your wife and you talk about something random? This microwave sucks. And next thing you know, there's ads on your phone or you're searching Google. And, oh, there's a microwave for sale. Like, I haven't even looked for microwaves on the internet. Yeah. But he says that there's an avatar out you, a digital avatar. They know exactly how you think, what your beliefs are. They know how to manipulate you by the content they send your way. They know how to nudge you to maybe try to change your beliefs. I don't think everybody can have their beliefs change. I think beliefs are the root of what we are, of our existence, of our persona. Some people can, the deeper they're rooted, the harder it's going to be to uproot. But some people can, man. Some people don't have, I think especially the younger you are, the more confused you probably are because of the way society is. And if you're not deeply rooted, and we're rooted in Christ, you're going to be pretty malleable and you're going to be pretty easily persuaded to think the things that they want you to think. This is why this whole, again, I don't like to talk politics. I just know socialism and communism seems to be coming back. I just think if you read history, it never works. Regardless of what, and again, I'm not trying to be political here. There's certain things that just don't work. And it's idealistically, socialism and communism sound fantastic. We share everything. But at the same token, everybody's selfish. Everybody wants what's good for them. Communism, socialism is just a way for the rich to control 99% of everything else. And then the other 1% can share, the other 99% of the people can share that 1%. Like, it doesn't work out. It just doesn't work.
We're about to see in New York. So yeah. Government-funded grocery stores and everything else.
Dude, I think they do it on purpose, though, because New York City is a bunch of liberals. So then you have a bunch of rich liberals who want to get out of there. So where do they go? They go to Florida. They go to red states. And then that state becomes blue because millions of people move out. It's just a lot of the stuff is just a scam, just to create migration and influence the electoral college.
Yeah, you see a lot of that with Texas and Florida. Austin, super liberal now, and you're talking about a very conservative, traditionally state from people migrating around. So yeah, it's a lot.
Dude, even
there's a lot to take in with this episode.
Even during COVID, man, like, people left the big cities. Like, where I live wasn't that, I would consider it like small, medium, but ever since COVID, this place, you can't even drive around with a massive traffic jam. There's stuff going up everywhere. It's because people left Philadelphia, Baltimore, the big cities to get out of them during COVID. And now it's like the infrastructure where I live is not set up to handle the influx of tens of thousands of people that came over the past few years.
Yeah, it's because the restrictions were so severe. Like, in the Washington metropolitan area, you couldn't go anywhere. And if you were going to go somewhere, you had to wear a mask, glove, and a protective bubble just to pick up a burger or something. So most people migrated out to where they could go outdoors and have fun. Many of those people stayed. Now, a lot of people returned eventually when the mandates were lifted, but many people stayed. My company, which was full-time in person prior to COVID, went full-time remote, and people are all over the United States now. And a lot of companies stayed that way. So I don't know, man. What do you think about this? Do you think the internet is dead?
No, I think the internet's alive and well. I just think that the definition of dead in this case is that we are the minority. Humans are the minority on it. And I think it's just an inevitability that we will eventually become just little pawns within it. And we'll be lucky if we get any sort of good information. Is this going to become a major point of commerce to sell you crap that you don't need, to push porn that you shouldn't be looking at, to push bad ideology, bad religion, as this becomes a brainwashing tool to the point where it becomes so unbearable that they're going to demand biometrics or tokenization of your personality in order to get on it. And then it will become something that it was before, but at the expense of you losing all your privacy and becoming completely, you'll lose all anonymity in the process.
Yeah, that's a good point. From my perspective, I do think the internet is dead, and I do think we are doomed. I don't mean to be doom and gloom guy here. I think the majority of stuff that you interact with today are bots or are people that are using some type of LLM to write their content. I don't think if you get online today, especially in a written format, that you're escaping the machine. I think the best thing people can do is talk to their friends on their phone, people that they know they're real, talk to their church members, talk to their football buddies, whatever the case may be, but set the social media content aside and stay away from it. I just think it leads to badness. And I think as a society, though I don't think we're going to meet this task or challenge, as a society, we almost have an opportunity for a great reset, meaning that people could take this moment in time to say, yeah, I use the internet to work or to talk to friends who I know are real people, but let's set this garbage aside. Let's set these Facebook reels aside, and let's set Reddit aside, and let's set X aside. I don't need to engage with that. It doesn't increase my learning. And in fact, it's probably some government psyop or some corporation trying to sell me crap that I don't need, and they're trying to persuade me to buy it. And let's get back to life. I think this is our last, perhaps defining moment in history. That we can either say, we're going to put this shit aside and focus on real life, or we're going to lean heavily into it. And our humanity is going to be indexed in the bitstream and call it a day, man. It's over. I don't know. I think it's all shit out there, personally.
Dude, I don't think it's our generation that's going to have trouble stepping away from it. I think it's the generation, my kids' generation, which is your kids' generation, the generation behind us. Those are the ones that are going to have a problem stepping away from it. And the reason I say that, and these are just all anecdotal stories, but I like to work out. I work out a lot. And I have a lot of 20-somethings come up to me and ask me for advice. So inevitably, I get to talking to them. And I said, what do you do? I was at some diner here. And the kid's like, oh, you're big. I want to, what do? Tell me some stuff. And I said, yeah, that's cool. I said, what are you, like, are you in school? No, I just work out and I work at this diner. I said, dude, okay, what are your goals? And I asked, dude, I've had this conversation more times than I can remember. And these kids are fit. Like, they're good looking people. You can tell they work out. And he's, oh, I just want to be an influencer. And I'm like, what? And I don't say that to them like that, of course. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I'm like, but you should develop some sort of skill. But these kids see these Jake Pauls, these Logan Pauls, these stupid younger people on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, Snapchat, and they want to be that. They don't want to have to work a job like you and I have. They put that grind in. They want to make some social media content, get millions of followers, and make money and go live this fantasy life that doesn't exist for 99.99% of the people in this world. And that's what a lot of these people are striving to be. And those are the ones that are sucked into it and they're going to have almost an impossible time getting away from it. The generation that comes after them, maybe they'll see the folly in that and maybe they'll be wiser. But this generation is, I think, in a bad spot, man. And it's going to be hard for them to step away and disconnect because they spend more time on that stupid black mirror than they do looking around outside or around them.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think our generation is witness to what the history books are going to tell in the future. And it's going to be up to us. Guess what? They're going to blame us for it. So it's providing that guidance for the next generation to make the right choices and make the right decisions. What I tell a lot of my employees is right now, AI is the great equalizer to laziness. Back in the day, you would have a hardworking man that would churn out 15 hours and put out incredible work and you knew it was authentic and he would do it. Now you have somebody really lazy do that in 2 hours. Be able to write the memos, be able to write the emails, be able to engage with work. And it's a great equalizer for laziness. But eventually it's going to take that next step.
It's fighting the big man, but you have a gun. The gun.
And then what I tell the lazy people that if you don't make yourself of value to this organization, if you don't up your credentials, the next step is not being an equalizer, it's replacement. You will no longer have a job and you will find yourself in the unemployment line because it will replace you. It is only so long before I can't equalize what you're actually producing. So it's training that next generation to be ready. But I think now, today, is really that defining point is, are we going to put down our phones and get outside and engage with the real world? I think we should. Do I think it's going to happen? Absolutely not. People are lazy. But it's an opportunity to push society in the right direction. But I fear for that generation. I think your kids are a little bit more fortunate because they got 10, 15 years on my kids. And they have an opportunity to be in the right place at the right time when all this really nasty negative stuff comes along. But my kids being very young, I worry about the world that they grow up in.
Yeah, I mean, I think the great AI replacement's just around the corner. I don't think any of us are safe, if I'm being honest. Yeah. But I don't know, man. I just think you got to root yourself in Christ. You have to, we always say, man, get that wisdom and discernment, because a lot of the stuff on the internet, you have to really dig deep on that discernment part. And you really have to access that wisdom part. I don't know. Outside of the Lord, outside of Jesus, man, you have to really let those roots really take hold deep down in order to survive what's probably coming up here in the next few years.
Yeah. What do you want to close with tonight?
Man, same thing I do every night. I know last week I think I got cut off, but Jesus loves you. We love you. I love you, brother. And yeah. Oh, yeah. Send one of those bot armies our way and like and subscribe. Download. We need about a million of them. So if you can, if you guys can do that for us free of charge, we'd greatly appreciate it. We'll give you a shout out in the next episode.
Promo you. Great bot army.
Yeah. Email us zerosignaltruth@gmail.com.
What I would say is prepare the road before you, whether it's for your kids or for yourself, if you're of the younger generation, but you gotta be prepared for what's coming. One individual doesn't have the capacity to change. And so if you say, I'm going to set down my phone and go outside and live a what used to be a normal life, that will be good for you, but it's not going to change the course of history. So you have to be prepared and get ready, because most people says, I want to be middle class. A lot of people back in our generation says, I just want to have a decent job. I want to have a family. I want to have a decent single family home and call that good enough. That was average competition. And the average person was able to achieve that through a normal education and taking the routine steps and following along with the sheep and taking the normal pathways. But I think in the future, in order for you to be successful, you got to think a little bit differently and engage with work a little bit differently and build up your credentials to make you more valuable, because that pool is shrinking. More people can, you don't need as many people to drive trucks. You don't need as many people to be social media marketers or whatever the case may be. So you have to add value to your credentials. You may not be able to stop it. Be prepared and be ready and make sure your family's taken care of for that road ahead. Whether it's just, if you're an older generation, I know we trend well with people 35 to 44. That's sometimes just thinking about, I think about this a lot, is that I want to keep my house and pay it off so that I know that my kids in the future living off universal income have a good place to live, right? Because who knows what they're, it might be the old Soviet blocks that we see popping up in the future where people are forced to live for universal income. We don't know what it's going to look like, but you got to prepare for those things and think strategically about it if you want to take care of yourself and your loved ones in the coming future. But like Jay said, man, we love you. We thank you for tuning in. We may not always get everything perfect, but these are our honest opinions. We enjoy engaging with you, whether it's on social media or through our show. We do have some guests coming up in December that we're excited to meet with, and some national security experts, some retired DEA agents, talking about some really interesting topics. So stay tuned for our social media when those episodes will air, because I guarantee you, you will enjoy those conversations, because these are really valuable people within this space and can provide a really interesting lens to look through as you continue to discover these topics. But remember, it helps us out. Subscribe, comment, talk with us, and reach out, man. And though we have exciting guests coming on, we're always looking for more. And as we continue to shift towards that format, we're always going to be talking about conspiracy theories and fun things like that. But we want to bring in some of these true experts that can provide a new lens, so you just don't hear Jay and David talk about topics and find this unique lens and a unique voice within this space. So if you got an interesting story, you don't have to be the super credentialed guy that like the ones we're bringing on. If you just have an interesting take, man, we would love to talk with you and meet with you and figure out how we can get you on air, whether it's through a voice memo and we just air your recording, if you just want to say a specific thing, or meet with us and hang out and sip whiskey and talk for an hour and a half.
So, I want a good good cryptid real story. That's what I want.
Yeah, cryptid stories, that'd be an interesting one. Or ghost, right? Ghosts are always fun as well. Or perhaps you want to talk about dead internet theory, we'll do that again, man. It's a live topic and it's always evolving and changing, so if you want to come on and talk about AI, machine automation, I'm here for that too. But we thank you again for tuning in, and we hope you have a blessed night. Until then, we are Zero Signal.
We're out.
We've hit the 0 hour. That's a wrap on this week's transmission. New episodes drop weekly, so stay tuned and don't miss the next signal. Follow, subscribe, and spread the word. You've been listening to Zero Signal. We're out.